I'm SP from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a show about the general Marvel comic universe, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other hilarious and fun geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to another edition of Play Comics, where I'm just forgetting the whole video game thing. And we're talking to another comic creator about their wonderful thing. Today, we are talking to another Chris, because I just can't get enough Chris's on the show, it seems like. It's Chris Dreyer, maker of Freaks and Gods, and freshly funded, as of the time of this recording, Tales of the Dark Tunnel over on Kickstarter. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Pretty good. And I'm really excited to talk to you about this one, because I like old things, and this is modeled on old things.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's not, I'm not trying to repeat, or like, it's inspired, not copied. How about that? It's inspired by the old comics I read in the 70s and 80s, and it's inspired by the public domain characters, but it's not a copy of it. I'm not trying to pass this off as something that was made then.
One thing that I want to make sure I ask you right up front, because I want to make sure I don't forget it, is I see references in the footnotes here to, you know, issue number whatever from 1943. Is that all legit stuff?
Yeah, that is. That's actually where those public domain characters come from. And it's usually the, I do that in Freaks and Gods, and I also do it in Tales of the Dark Tunnel. And what I do, just to understand how I how I'm actually referencing those, I don't go and say that everything that a character has done, if they were in like 30 issues, I'm now continuing it from issue 30 and this is what the character's doing. What I do is I familiarize myself with the character, I read up on him, her, whatever, and if there's a story that they're in the middle of that I find that I just think is really cool, I'll say, let me create my version of this character from that point. So with Flame Girl, for example, her first appearance is in issue 30 of something, so I reference the battle with the bad guy that she ends up getting taken away from in that issue. That is actually the issue that it's from, so those are all legitimate. So in issue one of Freaks and Gods, we run into King of the Living Dead, and that references are where he first appeared. Actually, first and only appearance for King of the Living Dead.
So how much fun has it been for you going back and taking these public domain characters and breathing some new life into them?
It's like, I don't want to sound like a total... It's super fun. Let's put it that way. I'm just going to say it. It is super fun. I challenge myself, as an example, first thing that pops in my head for some reason is issue 6 of Freaks and Gods. Now, I know issue 3 was just solicited, you know, but I am that far ahead. I'll be starting issue 8 soon. But in issue 6, I decided that I wanted to do an underwater story, but I didn't want anything to do with Atlantis, because everyone does Atlantis with underwater. So I literally just searched for types of characters for underwater and water, and I found some. So then I had like 2 or 3, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna go with this one, and that was the one I used. So I'm actually kind of challenging myself. I need a science fiction inventor for this issue. So I'll find a science fiction adventure. The first 3 I run into, I'll try to make one of them work. Kind of pushes me to be a bit more creative, and it's a lot of fun.
I mean, it really seems like a lot of fun. Going in there, having a little bit of a history that you have to adhere to, but also making a character really be your own.
Oh yeah. If you read a lot of the, if you read a lot of the public domain, you know, Golden Age heroes, personally, I find their characters to be kind of all the same, very two-dimensional. I am going to fight crime, and I've got power, so I'm going to save people, and there's not a whole lot beyond that, at least what I've seen. Maybe someone will listen to this and pound their desk and be like, I want to show him. There's a lot. Good, show me. I want to see it. But so they're kind of open slates, so I just go in there, and I'm like, well, looking at their origin, where they come from, I try to create a history for them. I jot it down somewhere and I use it just for my reference. It's hardly ever mentioned in a book, but having those backgrounds I've created for them makes it easier when something happens. I kind of have an idea of what they would do.
So what got me into Freaks and Gods was I saw 215 Inc. having a sale on Twitter saying, hey, we'll send you free stuff if you order something. So I ordered something from them, and I can't even remember what it was that I actually ordered.
Supernaut.
Was it Super? It might have been Supernaut.
I think it was Supernaut.
I can't remember which one it was, but it probably was Supernaut, now that you're saying that. And Freaks and Gods was in the envelope with it. So, like, okay, you know, here's this thing that it kind of enticed me by the cover image, but I didn't know how shipping was going to be handled. This was buyed from their store, and the way they have that set up, it's a whole new place I had never used before. So honestly, I just wanted a thicker book to test it out with, because I figured that would be harder for the post office to mess up. That was almost my entire reasoning for picking a trade like that. And Freaks and Gods was in there. So of course, you know, I'm sitting here with a werewolf and a mummy and a space lady on the cover, but four people's heads on that little thing up in the corner. So, yeah, I got to figure out where that fourth head comes from.
Oh, yeah. I never thought of that. I've been with these characters for so long, I never think of what it's like when a person comes up for the first time and looks at it, and they're like, they're probably thinking, like, you, well, where's that fourth guy? I only see three on the cover. Well, they are the traveling trio. There is only three.
I'm not going to spoil it for everybody right this second, but there's a reason, and it makes perfect sense, and I love it.
Well, you can, it's not really a spoiler, it's the character. That's what I really sell them as.
No, mostly I just wanted to be a butthead and not spoil it right that second.
Got it. Well, we can just say, okay, next.
Let's do it. I mean, you've got Steve, Steph, who are alternate dimension versions of each other, who just kind of trade in and out on who's being in that present reality.
Right. Yeah. They are the exact same person. Just one difference. One's a man, one's a woman. That's it. I mean, I even imagine them having had the same upbringing, like the same kind of things happen to them. You know, they both fell off their bike and hurt their knee and, you know, those kind of things. So they literally are the same person, but they just are quantumly fused and they blink back and forth. Not like really fast. It's just like sometimes one will be there for 20 minutes, one will be there for 10, one will be there for 2, it's random.
And it seems like you can be able to pop them in and out just at will, which I'm sure is a ton of fun.
Oh, it is. They don't control it. I do.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. And in the script, I always have to say, I used to write every panel out, but now the penciler and I worked together for a while, so I just write what happens on the page. And I don't come down to who is who when until the dialogue, where I'll have Steve, Steph, and then in parentheses, Steph. So he knows that, okay, she says that. And then, you know, I even had in the first issue, they're talking, they're having this, they're telling the exact, they're giving that friendship speech at the end, and they go from one right to the other, and the word balloons are the same. It's shared. So, yeah, they're a lot of fun. Lots of fun.
You have Atom? I don't know.
Atom. Yeah, Atom. He's cool. The first god of the Egyptian pantheon. He's got other names. I even mentioned them in later issues. He has been in mythology melded with Ra, I think. I mean, you know, the Egyptian mythology is it's pretty rich with some great ideas. But I picked Atom because he is the creator god. He always refers to himself as the first one, the creator god. But he lived for billions of years, and he just wanted to finally sleep. So he found an alternate dimension where people like him could die. And he lays down to sleep, but evil Professor Hyde resurrects him, and the only way he knows how, and that is to piece his body back together with animal creature parts and bind him in magic mummy wrappings that makes him the creator god, makes him a demigod. You know, I mean, from my perspective, demigod sounds good, you know, but Atom is like really angry about that, and he's just always angry, and he's so fun to write.
That came across really well. Just the fact that he's always going on. Honestly, he sounds like me when I'm being dragged around by my parents for stuff. Like, I'm tired. I want to go to bed. Let's just go.
Yeah, I know. I never thought of it that way. That's pretty funny. But yeah, there's even a later issue where he even talks about how he wishes he, like this one character is like a freak of nature. Issue 3 has him in it as half man. He's like literally half robot, half man. And Atom says, you know what? This is so terrible because I've written so much. I'd have to go actually get the book and read it. I actually forgot what he says.
You don't remember every single thing you've ever written?
I cannot believe that. Okay, I have to turn in my writer's card now.
Well, this has been a great interview, Chris. Where else can people find you around the internet? No, we'll save that for later.
Yeah, okay.
And you also have the Werewolf Knight Bargeist.
Bargeist, yeah. He's the Silver Knight. Okay, of the three main characters, I tried to keep them all not public domain, because if somebody were to come along the way down the road and say, hey, I have the rights to that character now, they can't take my trio away from me, right?
Right.
But Bargeist, I did use his origin from an issue, oh gosh, I forgot which one, where Silver Knight is battling this guy named Black Barton, and there's this mythical creature, Bargeist, of Anglo-Saxon origin. It's like a werewolf, basically. And so that is mythology. That is, what's the word I'm looking for? Folklore. Yeah. So he ends up battling, and in the original comic, he ends up winning. But I say, okay, that's great. But what happens if he doesn't win? He is separated from his beloved Tarna, and he not only didn't get cured of being bitten by the Bargeist, he now has transformed into it, and he has his own mind. So you get this giant purple werewolf with a tunic, sword, shield, like he's a knight, but he's a giant purple werewolf. This is so cool.
It really is. And I don't know which one of them is my favorite character, honestly, because I think they're all just great.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
How long do you see this series going for? Is that a safe question to ask you, knowing that 215 is probably going to listen to this later?
Yeah, that's a safe one, because we have a contract. Currently, right now, we are set for 8 issues. But I do have an outline through 12. And every time I comb through public domain websites and read up on stuff looking for a character for something else, I find more stuff that I note and log for future Freaks and Gods issues. And again, sometimes the villains are my own as well. The second issue, the physician, I made him up completely. So right now we're set for 8, but I plan on doing more after that. If 215 is there, awesome. You know, we'll see.
I hope it goes for 12 and then another 12 and then another 12, because this is just a lot of fun. And I mean, it seems like the perfect little series where you could sub people in and out if you get tired of writing some of these characters and be fine. Or you can do like the real reason we're here today and branch off into a whole nother side thing. Because one of the, I almost want to call it a character here. One of the characters in Freaks and Gods is the Dark Tunnel that's pulling them around to different places.
Right. Yeah. In the real world, the Dark Tunnel is basically a way for me to get characters from different public domain publishers together that couldn't otherwise get together. So all of public domain, all of everything is accessible through this cosmic doorway, the Dark Tunnel. And so you don't have to follow the Traveling Trio, the original characters, Freaks and Gods. So we have three new ones, which are straight public domain, Flame Girl, Atom Man, and Magno. So they got pulled in by the Dark Tunnel.
And these are three characters that I have not heard of for anything, which I'm sure was a big draw on you using them.
Okay, yeah, because there's a lot of people using public domain characters. Sometimes you don't even know that they're doing it. I mean, I've been looking deeper into it, and I find more people have been publishing comics from public domain way back in the early 80s. I didn't even know that. These characters are not used as much, which is funny. Now that I'm using them in this, I see them in a lot of other places. I'm not saying I started that. It's like when you buy a different kind of car, and all of a sudden that same model, you seem to recognize it all over. I think that's what's happened. By no means am I a trendsetter, but there's a lot of characters that are always used. The Black Terror, Amazing Man, you know, those kind of things. Moon Girl. These are the ones that people always seem to use. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to use the things that are always used. Sometimes I will find characters from, you know, like in the first issue of Freaks and Gods, the main villain is King of the Living Dead. He is from a horror anthology series. He had one story in one issue. But now I've made him a supervillain. You know, so I like to do that. I like to use older, not older, but more obscure ones. So I picked six heroes that I don't see a whole lot of. And I liked all six. And I asked my penciler to pick the three he wanted. Because it make him happy. I mean, he was really excited about this. He calls it the super team, the super trio, just jokingly between us. So I let him pick, and he picked three that I kind of already circled that I wanted. But if you had picked any other ones, I would have gone with it. I would have ran with it.
So are you and the penciler sharing a bit of your brain?
No, that would be the first time that I've actually incorporated, you know, usually I'm like, hey, Giuseppe, are you still available to do another issue of Freaks and Gods? He's like, yeah, send me the script. That's pretty much all it is. But this time I wanted to bring him in because it was extra work and I know he's busy. So I thought I'd be like, you know, let him pick, you know, have him like own a little bit of it because that's cool, you know. Because I really do value the fact, I mean, I've been working with this guy since my first graphic novel back 2004, Unit Primes, and, second one, sorry, 2007. That was the second volume. That's where I first started working with Giuseppe. So yeah, want to give him a little pat on the back.
So how did you go about getting hooked up with Giuseppe in the first place?
Oh, that's a very easy answer. Digitalwebbing.com. I put an ad on there back in the day, and it's still available. The website's still open. But, social media wasn't what it is then. I don't even think there was. I think they were just whatever. So, yeah, I put an ad on digitalwebbing.com. I'm looking for a penciler. I don't do pay on the back end because artists never get paid on the back end. So I try to offer whatever I can, and he was fine with it. So that's the whole story. And after that graphic novel, he did everything. He turned it in on time. He was great to work with. So I just, you know, kept on asking him if he was available.
I'm sure he really appreciates working with somebody who, you know, pays him. because I've seen too many times where artists just didn't get paid.
Right. And I, you know, I've been that, that's happened to me. A couple of companies just suddenly, I went to bed one night, you know, and they owed me like, you know, 100, 200, 2,500. Wake up the next morning and, oh yeah, they're gone. Yeah, here you do.
Well, I mean, if anybody wants to know the quickest way to not be allowed on the show, don't pay your artist and you will not be allowed on the show.
Yeah, that's not cool. And offering money on the back end, I know that sometimes people, that's the only thing they can do. Or like beginning artists will take that credit and some books. But personally, I would recommend not doing that for too long, because then that's all you'll be known for. I'm not saying gouge publishers. Publishers have to, they got their bottom line too. And people like myself, who's just a guy who's hiring an artist, you know. But a little bit of behind the curtain there for you.
That seems like a tough one for me, just because I wouldn't have the money to pay somebody what I think they deserved. Like, I've gotten a few art things commissioned for me, and I ended up, like, tipping them what they wanted to get paid anyway, just because they were undervaluing their work.
It is tough. Because, everyone always tells me that I always keep an extreme, I always have too low of a page rate. You know, you gotta charge more. I'm like, well, I mean, all these years, I've been doing comic books for 20 plus years. You know, I've worked for Dark Horse and Avatar Press and, you know, whatnot. I still like, well, you know, I'll just take the minimum, you know, I don't want to. It is tough. That's why, as an artist, I do not like having to deal with the business end of anything.
And yet you're running a Kickstarter for your comic.
I am running a Kickstarter. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I find it a little bit different, because I'm putting everything out there. People come, read the Kickstarter, read the campaign. If they don't like anything, then they just move on. But if they like something and they want something, then they pick a tier. I mean, there's no bargaining. I don't know. You know, like back and forth. I don't know how to describe it. But running the Kickstarter is a whole lot different than hiring pencilers and inkers and all that stuff.
Well, I mean, you do get to cheat and ink in your own stuff. It's like you're hiring yourself, so I don't think you have to pay yourself.
No,
not in that sense, anyway.
I do not cut myself a check because I don't have anything to do that. Yeah, but I do ink everything myself, and I color it, and I letter it, and I package it, and I create logos. I do it all except for pencil.
It seems really interesting to me. Why don't you pencil it if you're doing everything else?
Because when I draw, it's cartoony and cutesy. Takes me a long time to craft really anything. I have a hard time with facial expressions. I can do it all, but I would probably be like halfway through issue one right now of Freaks and Gods, and I started that back in 2014. I mean, I'm just really slow at it. So rather than putting my foot down and saying I can do this, and you know, I just realized it's just probably better to find someone else to do it for me who can do these things, and then as I ink, I correct, I move things around. I have pages from Tales of the Dark Tunnel and Freaks and Gods where I've liked what Giuseppe put on the page, but I didn't really care for the order, so I would just, you know, cut it all out, move it all around, and recreate a page. But like I say, penciling is not something I'm very good at.
Well, I bet you're a million times better than me, because I draw like a drunk 3-year-old.
Yeah, I'm like a drunk 7th grader. I don't know.
So what really made you want to do these kinds of stories?
Let me see. What made me want to do these stories? These are the kind of stories that when I sit down and I want to write a superhero comic, this is the kind of thing I can think of. This is the only thing that comes to my mind. You know, I'm not trying to mimic a style. That's my style. So if you're reading it thinking, wow, he's really nailed a 70s stuff, no, that's just how I write. And those stories, the wild, crazy, imaginative stories of traveling dimensions, and I find that it's just exciting and it's cool. My favorite books when I was a kid was all the cosmic Marvel stuff. Just loved it. It was wild. And you can see a lot of that, you know, as an influence in the things I do. But I just wanted to tell exciting, fun stories about characters you can like or hate, and just kind of step away from everything, enjoy that crazy world, and then come back to the real crazy world.
You know, one of the things I really liked about the way you wrote this was that Freaks and Gods just kind of jumped you in there. And I mean, there wasn't a lot of super introduction-y things. It's just, hey, there you go. Like, here's some stuff that you could probably know from some other place, which I now know is real. And I mean, even if you had made all that up, though, with all those references, I just think it's that kind of exposition, just kind of naturally slipping into the story, is something that I wish a lot more people would be able to pull off.
First, thanks. Second of all, that was what I read in the 80s. That's what those comic books were like. If you picked up an X-Men 165, right, you're there. I mean, you're here they are, you know. And as you read them for the first time, that is where you learn, oh, Wolverine's got the claws, he's got the storm can control weather. Oh, okay, I get it. You know what I mean? No, I realize Freaks and Gods is issue one, but I just kind of wanted the reader to not... I'm not a big fan of origin stories, which is funny because the Tales of the Dark Tunnel is kind of an origin story, but it's really more of like they meet and then they have to react. But I just kind of wanted to get the reader in there, and we can have dialogue and captions, and by the time the story is done, they're going to feel like, hey, I kind of feel like I know these people, and why is Atom always so angry?
I think it works really well, and I didn't even really see Tales of the Dark Tunnel as a origin story, really. I mean, part of that might have been because I read Freaks and Gods first, so I kind of knew what was going on with the tunnel already. And so, I mean, yeah, that did have a little more exposition in it with who those characters were. But even that, I mean, they're naturally going to have that conversation explaining who they are to the other two people there.
Right, that was the other... I mean, I had to come up with... Well, they come from different publishers, right? And I had to think of a way so that they could meet and explain who they are. And then I had this idea of, like, why don't I just see one of their great, like, one of their, not greatest, but a big moment in their, you know, fighting crime careers. Adam Man was a problem, though, because Adam Man had two issues. That's it. He never had a reoccurring villain that I remember. So I had to make something up for him. So the whole thing with, you know, what he was chasing, that was all, oh, what was the name of that like crime gang in Superman comics? I can't think of the name of them. Someone will have to comment and you know, let me know. I don't remember, but I kind of modeled what he was chasing after, the like a super high-tech crime organization. No, if you go back and read my selection, if you go find those issues that I reference, he does all that. That is an actual fight between him and Davey.
Wow, I'm going to... What? Okay, I'm leaving that in so everybody knows this is for real. Like, comics are crazy.
Plus, that has, for free, you can read... public domain comics, and just search that issue, and Giuseppe and I may have kind of, you know, jazzed it up a bit, and we also picked a point in the... I picked a point in the middle of the fight to alter it for the Tales of the Dark Tunnel, where the story goes differently, you know. It was like a split point. So, but yeah, he gets into a big fight with Davey.
That's just really cool.
Yeah, that's why I'm like the with Flame Girl. I followed the origin with the villain Octopus, and then I added on and said he didn't die and came back. Okay, right. Okay, and then Adam Man had to make it up. But with Magno, I just picked it up right in the middle of a fight, which gives them all something to be concerned about on top of everything else that's just suddenly happening to them.
Wow. Cool. So I'm going to go back and read a lot of really old comics now. Honestly, it doesn't take much to get me to want to do that anyway, because they're all just insane.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. Like the floating left hand, disembodied floating left hand of Satan. The horrible hand from Freaks and Gods number one.
I mean, even if I had no idea what you were talking about there, just that name alone is enough to get me to want to go check it out.
The horrible hand. I know, that's great.
From a legal standpoint, I understand that you're not a lawyer, and even if you were, you wouldn't be my lawyer and probably not licensed in my state. So that caveat aside, is there any real worry about using public domain characters?
Yes and no. Someone could come along. Okay, a public domain character can be used by multiple people, multiple publishers. What makes the characters that you see in the books, you know, Freaks and Gods and Tales, mine is my version, my retelling, my elaboration. So from that point on, they're now considered, that's my version. Someone else can come along and use Adam Man all they want, as long as they don't do the same thing that I did. You know, but yeah, there are some books, comic books that are in public domain that is kind of wibbly wobbly from what I've read. I tend to stay away from those publishers because those older books, because there's some question if they're public domain or not. And if my research slips and I use a character that someone does have rights to and they send me a cease or desist, I have already made it my policy to do that. just to not use them and change it. Just do what I have to change it. That's why if, God forbid, someone comes along and says, well, you know, Silver Knight is a part of this book, and now that publishing company now owns all these things, so the Silver Knight is actually owned by somebody else. You can't use that, so Bargeist is gone. Technically, Bargeist isn't gone, because that would be like saying you can't use a werewolf. It's folklore, so... I think I'm doing a lot of legal gymnastics, and I'm not even a lawyer.
I mean, you got to make sure your butt is covered.
Yeah, you're right. And I have several websites, and there's also links to legal websites. The U.S. you know, government's got websites for that. I read those things. If, like I said, if something slips, it slips. It's never intentional. So I will just stop and I will just change whatever I have to, because in the end it's really, I love what I've done with all these characters, don't get me wrong, I really do, but I don't think I have the money to battle to keep them in one issue. You know, so if it happens, it happens, but right now I'm very confident with the ones I have picked as being free and clear and definitely in the public domain.
For anything that I write, I think I'm just going to try to make characters up so I don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also why I create some of my own stuff. Like the main villain in Tales of the Dark Tunnel, that's my creation. And that's what Steve Steff is inspired by, 1950s science fiction. Atom, I just love mythology, especially Egyptian mythology. So that can't be touched. And like I said, Bargeist is nothing more than the English werewolf folklore, if you really break him down. So, yeah, those three, the traveling trio, they're mine.
I mean, Bargeist definitely seems like the one that would be the closest to being able to be taken away, but also I don't see how anybody would be able to come by and copyright a werewolf who's also a knight.
I haven't seen it anywhere. I mean, maybe there is, but if there is, it's not my version. It's a different version, which is fine.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. Mine's not, like, bloodthirsty and violent. He's the nicest, cordial guy you'll find.
I would love to have him over for dinner, and I think it would be a wonderful time.
He would be, and he would even help you set the table and wash the dishes when it was all done. He's a super nice guy. Atom would just smash it all up and dig a hole in the backyard and bury it. Dishes are done.
Yeah, I don't know if he's coming.
He would not even come. If it wouldn't be for the other two, he would not be there.
I'd be okay with that.
He'd be like, is Hyde going to be there? No. Is anything there going to kill a bunch of people? No. Then why am I going?
I am fully prepared to take this out, but Hyde is going to show up, right?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to drag things on forever and ever. This isn't Lost. This is Freaks and Gods. He comes in issue 7.
Don't tell me that. Now I know things.
Yeah, I know. Now everyone else, just don't tell anybody else.
Okay, only the hundreds and thousands of people who will listen to this.
Right. Okay, all of you, don't tell anybody else. Number 7. Yes. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, I've built him up throughout the issues every time something even remotely could be from Hyde. I mean, Atom just flips out. And I've kind of built it up so that when I got to write the story, I'm like, is he bad enough? I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll have to leave it up to everybody to let me know if he is or not.
How far have you planned with the Tales from the Dark Tunnel title?
Okay, that one is interesting. About 2 years ago, I was on Patreon. And I think it was the wrong time for me to be on there because Freaks and Gods number 1 was just out. And I hadn't really spent a whole lot of time building a fan base. I don't have a huge fan base, but I have some right now, and I'm very happy. But so I was on Patreon, and I thought maybe I should do a one-shot comic that I only release on Patreon. And then I had to think of what that book would be. And then I thought, well, let's just expand the Freaks and Gods universe, or the DT universe, Dark Tunnel universe. So I need some heroes, and I need a villain. And then, you know, the process goes from there. Well, then I left Patreon because it just wasn't working. And I had already written a script, and Giuseppe had already started it. So I thought, I'll just bring this to Kickstarter. And now I'm getting a really good response, a lot of good comments. I mean, I'm at 1505 of 1300, so I'm pretty excited about that. And I've had several people say, okay, so what's the next one? Is this continuing, or is this just a one-shot? And I even had my penciler message me, I really think we should do another one. So the answer is I'm probably going to do another one.
Well, there better be another one, because I want another one.
And by doing that, I have to then, because this is how I think, then I'll probably end up filling in gaps for a third and a fourth. It's just kind of how I am. So my plans for Tales is a lot less, to borrow a term from Doctor Who, wibbly wobbly, than with Freaks and Gods. So, I mean, okay, now you've read Tales, right? Do you feel it's a self-contained, complete story? Do you feel like, okay, everything that's happened, I know how it ends personally, I know what, you know, because you want more, because, you know, but overall, it's a self-contained story, and it's finished.
Overall, it is. I mean, it's like that movie where you can go and you can super easily see where they can keep going, but it is a satisfying enough ending. I mean, you're not sitting up here and saying this thing didn't end.
Right. There's no cliffhanger. Everything's finished. Right. Then I bring in that 10-page backup story with Scarlett Dalton. Trying a little bit, a teeny bit of horror, but I think my style always tends to lean more into the superhero-y kind of thing. So, and that was a fun story to write, too.
Is that another public domain character?
Yes, she is. She appeared in, let me see here, I got some, Adventures in the Unknown, number 5, 1949. it's one of those comic books where it's like got five or six horror stories in it. You know, everyone's new. Nothing ever continues. Her story didn't continue. It's just her story, and then she's done. But I kind of felt sorry for that character. I really think that story that she's from. But in that, in the backup story, I have all those panels that give a quick retelling of her origin, right? And you know she got, like, screwed. I mean, royally shafted in that particular story. And I thought that was completely uncool and unfair. So I thought, I'm gonna continue her story. And that's where we get Scarlet Unknown, who, oddly enough, is not dead, not alive, works as Supernatural, but still travels the multiverse through the Dark Tunnel.
I mean, maybe the Dark Tunnel has good rest stops or something.
Maybe. Well,
I don't know what's
you read
in there.
Issue 2 of Freaks and Gods, that really sweet cabin that they were there for a week.
I mean, I would take there for a long time.
I know, yeah. When I got done writing it, my son asked me, so does the Dark Tunnel maintain cabins throughout the multiverse for their for his traveling people to rest? And I'm like, I don't know. Sure. It's a good idea.
Maybe it does. And then, but it could also... I mean, you can use those ideas all you want. I don't care.
Mike doesn't care, as long as it's good.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, speaking of that, I was listening to that interview, and I don't honestly think I followed your guidelines for submission. I think I did. I'm not sure. So just thought I'd toss that out there.
I mean, if a good thing gets... Let's talk about that for a second.
Okay, sounds
good.
So
you've worked with a lot of publishers, by your own admission. Generally, what I'm hearing from people is have as complete a thing as you can to submit to them, which in your case, I mean, you can do art and writing and lettering. So that's really easy for you. In my case, I would have to find somebody to do the art or find somebody who I have a good enough relationship where I can draw them stick figures. But have that be okay, knowing, hey, I will get an artist. I just can't do the art myself, but I have an idea. And find somebody who I can hope that's good enough with. But I do actually have a question, I think. This isn't just me rambling. What have been some of the craziest requirements that people have had in getting submissions to them?
Right off the bat. In 2020, there are some publishers that will only accept packages and snail mail. And I am not joking. I would love to work with them, but there's no way. If you send a link or a low-res PDF to an editor, they delete it.
That seems crazy.
That does. I mean, there's been some I'm like, oh my gosh, that company, they're open for submissions. And I mean, not only do I do my own stuff, I got my publisher, but I also sometimes look for freelance work as an anchor. So like, oh my gosh, I start gathering up all my, files and creating a new PDF of some of my current work. And I go to the website because I heard that they're accepting and they're only going to do it through snail mail. So I don't do it. Because you have to print it. It has to be at a certain size, and you have to have an SASE, which is a self-addressed stamped envelope, if you want your material returned, which is how I did it back in the 90s when I started inking, you know, for publishers. But 2020, that is the strangest requirement that I have seen.
I mean, you sent me this copy of Dark Tunnels, and the only reason it took me hours and hours to get it was because you sent it while I was at work and I didn't want to download it at work.
Right, yeah. But I sent it through a website that holds it for 2 weeks.
why would anybody?
Right.
There has to be somebody old in the company that just doesn't want to deal with email or something.
Well, they'd have to be pretty old. I mean, I'm pretty old, and if I would be like, no, I always say email it to me. I want to send me a link, email, Dropbox or WeTransfer, something. Just don't mail it to me.
I mean, you'd think they'd want to be able to throw it on their tablet and take the tablet in the bathroom with them, and then, hey, this thing sucks, just instantly go to another one.
It would be easier, but I don't know what the thought train is. Maybe they think if an artist truly, really, really wants it, they're going to do it this way.
No, I think if an artist really, really wants it, they'll find a publisher who will take this better form of submission that doesn't require me spending so much money to possibly get turned down.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. It's just a lot easier just to... Heck, you don't even have to fill people's email boxes. You could just send them a link. You know, nothing to download, click, and you're looking at your DeviantArt website or whatever sort of website you have set up for your portfolio. But as far as, publishers accepting, like, creator-owned work, if you don't have it done, don't submit it until you do. I think one of the many reasons why 215 liked Freaks and Gods is I already had 4 issues done when I sent them issue 1. So, and I thought they were only going to publish 4 issues, and then I read the contract, and I'm like, wait a minute. So I emailed Mike. He's like, yeah, we're going to want 8. So I suddenly had to create 4 more issues. So yeah, do that. Have it ready. And as far as, I know I talked earlier about back-end payment and stuff, but sometimes if you have a project like yourself, you just have to find an artist somehow. Maybe you have a distant cousin who loves comic books.
I have my adopted internet children with good art skills and
perfect.
A way too low value of their work.
Ooh.
So they'll get paid what they say they expect to get paid if I had to hurry up and get it out. But also, dude, no, I'm not paying you $5 for a page. I'm pulling a number out of my butt for that because I don't think they value themselves that low. But it's like, no, you're not getting that super low amount. Come on, let me give you something real.
Mm-hmm. Right. A lot of artists run into a promise of high page rate and then don't get paid at all. I've always thought if I had a moderate to low page rate and I get paid, I'm ahead. So
has there been any, obviously you don't have to answer this, but has there been any push to get Tales of the Dark Tunnel stuff over onto 215?
No, we haven't talked about it, haven't mentioned it. This was a side project that I wanted to do, and I think they know that it just helps both of us. I mean, it helps Freaks and Gods, because a couple of the tiers are Freaks and Gods books. So if you get a tier, you get the Tales of the Dark Tunnel, you get issues 1, 2, and 3 of Freaks and Gods, and then you may be hooked and you may want to know more, and then issue 4 is going to be in previews for November. So it kind of works for everybody. So there was no push, no question. I just said, hey, I'm doing this side project and it will not interfere with Freaks and Gods. And then they share it. I mean, he shares it all the time. And so, yeah, it's cool.
I'm just slowly making a list of reasons why I will call Mike when I finally get my thing written and arted.
Yeah.
And as far as your reward levels go, how did you go about deciding what was going to be where?
Oh, you know what? That was trouble. I had a hard time with that because obviously there's the digital, then the 3 digital copies of the 4 actually, then there's the actual copy of the book, but I had made this oversized Tales of the Dark Tunnel, Freaks and Gods, oversized book a couple years ago as a thing when I would take with me to conventions before 215 picked up FNG. And it's oversized as in like 8x12. It's not as big as they used to do back in the 70s. It was like oversized reprints that Marvel and DC used to do. So I have some of those left over, and they're just great, so I tossed those in. I created a new product because I love making trading cards, but I made a series of 11 trading cards that have all the characters from Freaks and Gods and Tales of the Dark Tunnel and some villains. So instead of trying to print a set of 11, trying to keep it affordable, I ended up printing a mini book of the front and back of those cards, and I call it a trading card book, and it is the size of a trading card. It is 2.5 by 3.5. It fits in your protective sleeves. It'll fit in the book that you keep your trading cards. The Magno action figure, I reached out to Amazing Heroes, asked if I could buy three and offer them as rewards. And he said, oh, no, I'll just send you three. Just make sure everyone knows where you got them. That was awesome.
I want to say by the time I looked at this, those were all gone.
Those three were gone within the first 12 hours, yeah. I wish I had more, but I got three and I'm happy because they're super cool. I have my own. I bought in to one of their crowdfunding to do that, and I have my own, but I'm not going to depart with my own. I'm going to keep that one. That one's mine.
Oh, I don't blame you for that at all.
Oh, and then the ash can. That is issue 4, black and white. Solid color paper for just like they used to do back in the day. Ash cans were meant to be something that publishers would quickly print up, everyone could look at, read, see how it flows, and then literally toss it into the can, throw it away. So I'm doing that. That's like I said, that is the complete 4th issue of Freaks and Gods. So you can read it there. It's not, obviously it's not color. I got a lot of some of the special effects taken out, no shading. It's just basic line work. Although I did redesign. Now, if you notice, FNG from 215 has a Marvel, 70s Marvel cover kind of layout. This ash can has a 70s DC kind of look to it. The way that DC used to do their covers back in the 70s. I think that's pretty cool. I think I might go with that for issues 5, 6, 7, and 8 of FNG. I'll have to see.
Honestly, I was having a hard time deciding which one I would do because, like I've said here, I've already got the first 2 Freaks and Gods. I've got number 3 on my pull list at the shop.
Sweet,
and
thank you.
I'm not going to pull that away from them because they need their money too.
Absolutely.
Even though they don't believe me that Mike will cover shipping or something to make it worth it.
Oh, for the store to buy from them, from 215? Yeah.
Yep. I don't know. They're not going to listen to this anyway, so I can say it all I want. But, I mean, if anybody wants to get into Freaks and Gods, this really is a good way to do it because, I mean, you're getting Freaks and Gods. You're getting this self-contained Tales of the Dark Tunnel story, which could be something more, could be not something more. I don't know. We'll see. I hope it's something more. But, you know, you get your first 3 issues of Freaks and Gods, and I can tell you for super absolute certainty, the first 2 issues are pretty good. And I see no reason why the 3rd issue wouldn't be pretty good as well.
I did change pencilers for that, though. It's a different penciler.
Oh, well, see, that's just going to ruin it. There we go.
It's all ruined now, I know. But it's the same inker, it's the same tracer and colorist, so.
I mean, I hope it's the same tracer and colorist.
Yeah. Just, I don't think it would be an FNG book if I didn't do something.
I mean, you can always let somebody else take it over later. I'm going to throw up a little bit now from saying that.
I literally don't have any trouble with those kind of things. I have a long time ago when I decided that I'm not good enough to draw my own comics. That was when I learned to do my best to check the ego at the door and get people who can. So maybe my ideas are only going to hit issue 12.
Who knows? Even if that's... If that's all it gets to, that's more than a lot of things get to. And I mean, that's a whole 12 issues of people getting to read your stuff.
That's still pretty cool.
So looking at the stretch goals, I mean, this is just a selfish question for me. Obviously, we hit the first stretch goal because that was super low bar.
I did that because I just wanted to give everybody something, and this particular penciler is popular. He's a fan favorite when it comes to public domain stuff. Chris, if I pronounce his name wrong, I'm sorry, Milgreen? Yeah, I asked
that's how
him.
That's how it looks like I would say it.
Right. I asked him to do this cover kind of based on the Fantastic Four 243, I think the issue is, where Galactus is kind of reaching out with all the heroes flying around him. And it just turned out great. So that one was at $1 over my goal, because I wanted to make sure everyone got a little added something. So 6x9 print.
See, that's the kind of person you're helping support when you support this Kickstarter. You just really want to give people your stuff. And then it looks like we're, from what you were saying earlier, because I'm too lazy to scroll up the page and see where you are right this second, we're real close to getting that Scarlet Unknown print. Is that like a second print to everybody?
Yeah, then they'll, yeah, that's also, anyone, well, not everybody. You have to be a,
well, yeah,
a shipping reward, right. Shipping. So yeah, that one is the, when I got the penciler, Sean Van, oh man, I feel so bad that I can't remember his name.
Names are hard. That's why I link everybody all over the place, yeah, on the site, so I don't have to remember.
I have a subscription to a magazine called The Creeps. It's fantastic. And he has done a lot of work in there, you know. So I contacted him and I got him to do this 10-page story. Plus I asked him to do a cover, because my original idea was this book was going to be a flip book. So when you hold it one way, you would go through and you read the superhero stuff. And then when you flip it over, now it's going to have that cover for Scarlet Unknown. And then you read her 10-page story. Plans changed. So I had this really awesome cover that I wasn't going to use. So it is now going to be the print. And we're only $45 away from that one. So then everybody would also get the Scarlet Unknown cover print, 6x9, along with the one by Chris.
I really hope we get there, because this cover is beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that villain is really cool. He eats souls. I'll just leave it at that. He's also in the trading card book. So is Scarlet.
So if we can get it up to $1,550, then you can get them twice.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the goal. Honestly, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you right here. I just want these stretch goals to get hit, because when we get into the new house, which I swear is eventually going to happen for longtime listeners, I'm not just making this up, I'm going to have a lot of wall space. I need to fill it up, and I want to fill it up with stuff that I like to look at. So I'm going to figure out how I can hang this stuff up on the wall and not ruin it. And just have it there where I can look at it and be podcast inspiration.
Right. Oh, cool. Yeah. And then 1800, I go in stints of 250 is what the goals are. Because I started my goal at 1300, that's why everything's all weird. You know, like 18, 15, 50, 1800 are bookmarks. And then later on, there's some trading cards. I've got like actual trading cards, but not a full set, just like two. So
now there's going to be legends of the rest of the set being lost in the tunnel.
The rest of the set is going to be buried next to the E.T. video game. Oh, wait, no, they found that.
Yeah, that's real.
It's a long time ago. Okay,
how
so
crazy
then
is
you're
that?
Right. They got lost in the dark tunnel, and the dark tunnel was so angry it scattered them all across the multiverse. Yeah, I like that. That's what happened.
Put that in a story. Right, yeah. Here, I relinquish all rights to that. I don't know awesome. If that's something I can legally do, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, I don't really think, you know, Freaks and Gods Card Quest 1 of 6 is really gonna, it's gonna go very well. I don't know, maybe it would. I don't know, it depends on how I play it.
I mean, I've seen crazier things work before.
True.
So this campaign is ending on November 4th. As of when we're recording this, that is, I'm going to call it 3 weeks. When this comes out, obviously, everybody listening to this, you're going to have plenty of time to go and back it on Kickstarter. But pretend like you don't, so that we're not coming down to the wire and then, oh, no, am I going to hit the stretch goal, please? I want this thing to be super funded. I want to hear that Chris has wet his pants because he woke up one morning and all of a sudden there's an extra $1,000 of support.
Ooh, that would be fantastic. Actually, I probably would. So I'm just dropping that out there. My wife won't be too happy about it, but...
Well, that's why you just make sure you get out of the bed first. At least then you don't have to change the sheets.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. You didn't say where. You just said it was going to happen. Yeah.
See, I got my butt covered. We're good.
Excellent.
I mean, being completely serious, though, I'm really excited to have an actual copy of this. I mean, I do get to cheat, and I've read the whole thing. That's fine. But I want to have an actual copy of this. And I'm very excited that that's something that's going to happen. I'm very excited that there's maybe going to be glimpses of things in Freaks and Gods. Don't tell me if there is or isn't. I don't want to know. But they're in the same universe, so theoretically it could happen. I'm going to be looking for it. Because that's just how my brain works.
Well, don't look too hard. I'm going to tell you right now because...
I'm going to look for it, and I'm going to find things that you subconsciously put in there.
Okay.
I'm going to make weird connections.
So is this like what is that, the cereal boxes and The Shining? Is that how deep we're going to go? What is that? Those some of those theories they have about The Shining?
I'm not too far up on my Shining ones.
But you know what I'm talking about.
But
right?
Yeah, this is definitely going to be some fully headcanon fan-made stuff.
Oh, cool. I like it. I like it.
And as I've said multiple times too, Freaks and Gods over on 215 Inc., tell your local comic shops to get it in for you. I mean, we're not here pumping 215 Inc. specifically, but you do have things published over there, so I feel like it's okay to say it. These smaller publishers will work with the comic shops a lot of times. But they want to get their stuff in the store because, I mean, you've seen the covers for these. Can you imagine how many random copies they would sell just from having this sitting on the shelf?
Well, being the artist of it, as artists usually are, I'm extremely hard on myself, so I can find plenty of things wrong with those covers.
Well, however, I can safely say that they would sell at least 5 extra copies.
Ooh, I like the sound of that, yeah. But you're right, comic book stores, yeah, the people like 215 Inc. they will definitely work with you because the whole thing that they want to do is get these great projects out to people.
And if nothing else, me getting them to get issue 3, the guy packing my pull list is going to have to take a look at the cover.
Right.
So he'll see that.
Yeah, and that's got a pretty epic war going on the cover.
I know, I picked a really good one to have to make them grab for the first time.
It's got a kid dressed as a king on a giant stone soldier statue beating the crap out of a robot T-Rex, and yeah, it's all kind of craziness. The sword and yeah, good stuff.
And we never know what you're going to do with this Tales of the Dark Tunnel book. Maybe in theory sometime in the future you could have it available in some other way, but let's all pretend like that's not going to happen now. This is your chance to get it. Go back it on Kickstarter.
Yes, I really don't have any other plans aside from the Kickstarter campaign.
Which will be really cool because later I can say, hey, look, I have a copy of this book and you don't. And brag about it to my friends. I will totally do that.
But, I don't know if I'm going to do that or not, because I don't know. Because right now I got 68 backers, and maybe it's my Midwest upbringing, but I just don't want to be like a jerk. Or be perceived as a jerk. Well, I went through all this on your Kickstarter, and you can just pick it up there at a show. You know?
Well, there's a big difference in unnamed publisher, mostly because I forgot the name of them, who are putting their books in Walmart before the Kickstarter people get them, versus... And I honestly can't remember who it is. It's...
Oh, that's not right.
If I can figure out who it is, well, like before this gets out, I'll edit myself in and tell people who it is. I will actually ask the people who should know who that is too, because right now it's just because I've been awake for too long. I can't remember who it is. But in my mind, there's a big difference in somebody like that versus like even if it's a year or two later, you grabbing this and taking this to shows. And, I mean, maybe you give it a different cover or something. Maybe you just do something to where I can say, hey, I have a Kickstarter one definitely, and you don't. I mean, maybe you don't do that. I don't really care because I got the book now. And I'm not supporting this because this is my only chance to get it. I'm supporting this because I want to make sure it gets made. And I'm doing that knowing that there is the chance in the future that you take this with you to shows and print it. Maybe you take this to 215 and they publish it over there. I don't care because I want my copy now.
Okay. Well, that's good to know because I never want to, like I said, some people have accused me of being too nice. So I think that might be coming through. I don't know.
Well, I mean, based on your 68 backers. So I am more than 1%.
Yeah, it's good enough.
You know, I'm sure there's at least 3 people who would agree with me.
Well, some of them also got digital, so maybe they'll show up at a show and go, you know what, I should have bought the book. Oh, I'm glad you have one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they'll be like me too, where they're already getting Freaks and Gods, so they just kind of grabbed something on here to where they could get themselves covered.
I see.
In theory, you could know this already. I went for the print set and Tales of the Dark Tunnel.
Oh, you got the print set with the ones from Giuseppe?
Yep.
Yeah, those are cool.
And a lot of that was because I don't need extra copies of Freaks and Gods.
But you've already got some.
Yeah, I mean, I've got mine. I don't care. It's fine. But I'm going to get my print copy of this so I can take it in the bathroom because that's more fun than taking my Kindle in there. I'm going to have my print set that I can have up on the wall. And I'm going to very selfishly have my name on the thank you page.
Yes. They're all going to be in there.
So I'm going to get to point to people and say, hey, look, I'm in a comic book on a very big technicality, but I'm in there.
Well, this book wouldn't exist if it wouldn't be for people like yourself. That's why, yeah, I mean, to say, you know, it's technicality, that's kind of a huge technicality. I mean, the book would just be digital on my desktop if people like you wouldn't come along and support it. So, yeah, it's a big thank you page.
Well, good. I expect my name to be the biggest one on there, but not really.
I have to see how the typesetting goes on that one.
No, if my name is on, being completely honest, if my name is the biggest one on there, it better be because everything else is the exact same size. Because, I mean, I certainly didn't go for the action figure. I'm jumping on this relatively late. I mean, you pretty much had this done by the time I found out about it.
Yeah, I was surprised at how fast the action figures went. I thought they'd last a couple of days, but not like 12 hours, which is cool. Although I did get the guy who, Fresh Monkey Fiction is the company that does the Amazing Heroes. They shared this 2 days later. They shared the Kickstarter with all their fans, and someone commented like within a half hour, all he said was, the action figures are gone.
Oh.
So I apologize. I said, I'm really sorry. You know, I wish I had more, but.
Well, maybe the stretch goal at $5,000 can be there will be more action figures.
I'd have to give up my own.
I don't run the action figure company, but if you can get another almost $4,000 in the next 3 weeks, maybe they'd be willing to make more. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'd have to talk to them about that. Make sure they get a
copy. It would be a good problem to have.
Yeah, that would be a very good problem to have. Yeah.
So I feel like if I let this, we would ramble on about stuff all night. And it would be entertaining for everybody. But I need to get sleep.
Sounds good.
So, Chris, obviously it's been great having you on. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
I'm on all the big three, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I just do a lot of posting about Freaks and Gods and Tales. Yeah, you can also email me at freaksandgods@gmail.com. It's all one word, freaks and gods. The, like, and, not the ampersand, because they don't do that.
But officially, when you write it out as the title of the book, it is the ampersand, right?
Yes, that's how it is when I, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just like to just be consistent and actual.
Yeah, I always use that. I just like the look of it. It looks nice with the ampersand in it. Because I'm an artist, I can't turn that off.
And obviously, we'll have links to everything down in the show notes because that's so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things. Although these are all very easy words to spell.
Yes, I did buy a copy of what is that? What is that? It's a writing software, Hemingway Editor. And whenever I drop anything in there I've written, it always says I'm at a third grade level. So, yeah, it's pretty easy.
I don't care. They're fun reads.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not writing War and Peace.
And obviously, you guys know where to find me. Head on over to playcomics.com where there's links to all the social media stuff. Or just head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast. That's where I am mostly, because I can sneak that off better during work. Guys in the back, you already know I'm doing this. I don't care. I've joked about it long enough. You have to take me seriously at some point. And, I mean, obviously I would like it if you support me on Patreon, where for $1 a month you can get these episodes when they're being done edited instead of waiting for their regular release day. But if you have a choice between buying into this Kickstarter or supporting me, then buy into the Kickstarter and support me later. Or don't support me because you bought into the Kickstarter. I don't care, because every dollar you put into support is closer to me getting this other print. And I'm being very selfish right now. If you want to hear some of the other wonderful geeky shows on the Gunna Geek Network, you can head on over to GunnaGeek.com where, like I said, they have all kinds of wonderfully geeky shows. Most of all, if you like the music that I'm rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/bestday to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics. Here's a stack of comics right here, Freaks and Gods. Go ahead and do that. It's kind of a baby stack now with 2 issues, but if you wait a couple weeks, then it'll be 3 issues, and that's a bigger stack. And you can find yourself a new favorite character. I'm having ideas now. I'm sometimes very good at guessing things, so I'm not going to guess anything. I don't want you to have to tell me you can't answer.
Yeah, because, you know, if I'm like, I can't answer, that would mean that you're right.
Mm-hmm. That's how I found out my wife got a tattoo.
Oh. I don't have a tattoo like that.
Chris, guess what I did while we were on vacation? I don't know. Got a tattoo? What? How did you know? Like, for real, that's what it was. Except she sounded a lot less like me than I just did.
Well, okay, I hope so.